Hey, we're going to read Matthew chapter 23, starting in verse 1. A little bit longer section today. We'll go on down to verse 22. Then Jesus said to the crowds and to his disciples, "The scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat, so do and observe whatever they tell you, but not the works they do. For they preach, but do not practice. They tie up heavy burdens, hard to bear, and lay them on people's shoulders, but they themselves are not willing to move them with their finger. They do all their deeds to be seen by others, for they make their phylacteries broad and their fringes long, and they love the place of honor at feasts and the best seats in the synagogues and greetings in the marketplaces and being called rabbi by others. But you are not to be called rabbi, for you have one teacher and you are all brothers. And call no man your father on earth, for you have one father who is in heaven. Neither be called instructors, for you have one instructor, the Christ. The greatest among you shall be your servant. Whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and whoever humbles himself will be exalted. But woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you shut the kingdom of heaven in people's faces. For you neither enter yourselves, nor allow those who would enter to go in. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you travel across sea and land to make a single proselyte, and when he becomes a proselyte, you make him twice as much a child of hell as yourselves. Woe to you, blind guides, who say, 'If anyone swears by the temple, it is nothing, but if anyone swears by the gold of the temple, he is bound by his oath.' You blind fools, for which is greater, the gold or the temple that has made the gold sacred? And you say, 'If anyone swears by the altar, it is nothing. But if anyone swears by the gift that is on the altar, he is bound to his oath.' You blind men, for which is greater, the gift or the altar that makes the gift sacred? So whoever swears by the altar swears by it and everything on it. And whoever swears by the temple swears by it and him who dwells in it. For whoever swears by heaven swears by the throne of God and by him who sits upon it." So we have this long section, and we're not done with it, and it is probably the harshest thing. These are the harshest things Jesus has to say in almost all of his ministry. And it's worth spending a little time figuring out why. Why is Jesus being so harsh? Well, first, remember, again, this is the lead up to his passion, and he has just been challenged by the leaders in the temple. He has responded to all of their questions. He has told parables about them. And it is after the last question that he posed to them about Psalm 110 and who the Messiah is in relation to David, they could not answer, that Jesus now essentially turns to the crowds, not the Jewish leadership that he's been engaged with, but the crowds, and delivers this sermon against them. That's one of the things I want to emphasize. His criticism isn't against the crowds in general. It's against the leadership. It's against the leadership who are the wicked tenants who've been put in charge of the vineyard, but have not produced the fruits and rendered the fruits to the owner of the vineyard that they were meant to. So it's not against your average Jewish believer. It's not against a repentant or sorrowful sinner. It is against leadership who is abusing their leadership. And if you want to think about it as it's unfolded in the Gospel of Matthew, you might say it comes in three stages. Jesus came preaching the good news of the kingdom for the brokenhearted, for anyone who would want to be a part of it, and the leadership resisted him. And so as his ministry went on, then he began to teach in parables that were meant to try to sneak up on them and catch them and help them see what they were doing in light of Jesus' teaching in his kingdom. And their response to that was to plot to kill him. So now, Jesus denounces them thoroughly at the end of all of this. So this is Jesus' final statement against the leadership in Jerusalem, the leadership in the synagogues that are resisting Jesus and resisting his message. And I want to stress too, if you pay attention to this sermon, much of what Jesus has to say is that they've resisted his teaching in the Sermon on the Mount. So I'll bring that out as we go through. But remember at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, it says, "If you put my teachings into practice, your house will stand. It'll be like a house built on the rock. But if you don't put my teachings into practice, your house will collapse." Well, the temple is their house, and they have not put the Lord's teachings into practice. And so the coming storm is going to tear that house down. And that is precisely what Jesus said at the end of the Sermon on the Mount. So Jesus launches into some criticisms of them. He says first that their interpretation of the law is harsh. It's almost punitive. He describes it as a kind of a slavery. And it's clear all through Jesus' ministry that he didn't come to get rid of the law. He came to fulfill the law. And his teaching of the law, his interpretation of the law, which is the authoritative interpretation, brings life. It brings rest. It brings freedom. It brings people into flourishing. But their interpretation of the law binds people up. And so Jesus is ironically depicting the leaders in Jerusalem as little pharaohs who are laying great burdens upon the people of God, but doing nothing to lift them. And he also says that the heart of the law was for human flourishing. It was for blessing, and they have only been cursing. He criticizes them for doing all the religious activities to be seen by others, right? And remember, this is what he said in the Sermon on the Mount. Don't do your religious activities to be seen by other people. He says they make the little boxes that they put Torah scrolls in to put on their heads, these guys make them really big so everybody can see them. The tassels that Jews were commanded to put on their garments to remember the commandments in Numbers, they make really long so other people see that. He chastises them about the titles they use. And I don't think this is so much that Jesus is forbidding the use of titles. I think it is primarily that these people use titles as status, as doing what they do to be seen by others, as impressing one another. Notice at the end of that section, he says, you should all be servants, and your greatest desire should be to serve the people of God, not to receive titles and praise. And then, in the last section of our reading today, he launches into these woes. Let me say a few things about the woes. There are seven of them. And probably the best way to translate these woes is cursed. And I would put it right the opposite of what Jesus says in the Beatitudes. In the Beatitudes, he says, blessed are the poor in spirit. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Here he says, cursed are you. So they're the opposite of the blesseds because they've resisted the blessing. And in many ways, they match or pair with the Beatitudes towards the beginning of the book of Matthew. They pair with those and match with those in theme and number. So it's really important to see that this is this sort of final culmination of resisting Jesus and his good news of the kingdom. So in this section that we've read today, there are three of the woes. The first is, hey guys, you refuse to enter the kingdom of heaven. You refuse to receive the good news. That's bad enough. But what's worse is you keep other people from entering into the kingdom of heaven. This matches the first beatitude that says, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. So these guys, Jesus is essentially saying, are proud. And pride is the worst of sins. But what's maybe even worse is in their pride, they keep other people from entering the kingdom. The second woe has to do with their evangelism. They're great evangelists. They make every effort in the world to get people to believe what they believe. The problem is that Jesus says it makes them, their converts, it makes them more fit for hell. That they just train them in pride. They train them in judgment of others and binding people up. And then the third one, this one is a little bit harder to understand, but he is criticizing their finessing and finagling language and hair splitting to get out of their responsibility to their words, to their promises. Remember in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says, don't take oaths, don't make oaths. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. Do what you say you're going to do. Don't do what you say you would not do. And so Jesus is excoriating them for being very creative in wiggling out of their words. And again, it's another manifestation of their resistance to his teaching. Now, in the next section, we'll cover the remaining woes. But I want to end with this, because this is heavy stuff. But note, when Jesus is done with the sermon at the end of this chapter, he goes outside of Jerusalem, he sits on the Mount of Olives, and he's not like, put them in their place. But he sits down and he begins to weep. Jesus is the harshest he's been in the whole gospel here. But he is not delighted to do this. He is not sticking their noses in it. His heart is broken over the resistance of his people. Jesus is willing that none should perish. So here he is, having delivered this, and it says in Matthew 23:37, O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to it. How often would I have gathered your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, and you were not willing. See, your house is left to you desolate. For I tell you, you will not see me again until you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. So I want to leave us with this picture. Jesus says, your house is desolate. The temple is going to be left desolate. You've not built your lives on putting my teachings into practice. And so when the storm comes, that house will be torn down. But I want to leave with a picture of our Lord who is brokenhearted over the resistance of people to his teachings, particularly leaders. He is willing that none should perish. And everything he does up until there's nothing more he can do is aimed at bringing about their repentance so that they could turn and have life.